ideas and new technology are causing seismic shifts in the media industry. Where are we headed? What does it mean? Keep listening. Media strategist Gabriella Mirabelli talks with the brightest minds in entertainment and business. Meet the innovators, the risk takers, and the disruptors on the front lines of change from Hollywood, Wall Street, Silicon Valley, and beyond. The future is coming to a screen near you. Are you ready? This is the Up Next podcast with Gabriella Mirabelli.
Welcome to Up Next. I'm your host, Gabriella Mirabelli. My guest today is Raquel Ebeli, one of Australia's most respected media and content marketing experts, as well as an award-winning journalist and presenter. Since founding Newsmodo in 2012, he's led the industry as one of the driving forces of brand journalism. He connects media outlets, brands, and agencies to some of the industry's most renowned names in journalism, delivering end-to-end experience in ideation, content creation, and amplification. A media veteran, he leverages his decade-long experience as a senior TV news reporter to provide brands with the resources they need to create effective brand newsrooms. Raquel, thank you so much for joining us today. You're the CEO of Newsmodo, and for people who aren't familiar with it, can you tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah, sure. Thanks for having me. It's a real pleasure to be joining you this week. Great show, and I'm really excited to be on with you. Look, my background is in journalism. I worked in the TV industry here in Australia for over a decade, where I was a television presenter, reporter, journalist, wore many hats, news anchor, and weatherman at some stages. So there wasn't really many things in the newsroom that I didn't try my hand at. But after a decade or so, it became pretty obvious that the industry was changing, and there was a dismantling, if you will, of the newsrooms and certainly the broader industry, both here in Australia and globally. This was back in 2011. At the same time, I'd been developing an app for anyone to create and upload newsworthy content. At that stage, it was for user-generated content, as we would describe it. And that started gaining some traction here in the Australian market as newsrooms started paying more attention to content being a bigger part of the exclusivity of the stories that they were publishing, to the point where I was lucky enough to gain the investment of a third party, and we took the app to the next level, if you will, and created Newsmodo. And in the years since, we evolved that into a platform for freelance journalists. We aggregated around now 25,000 freelancers globally. Of course, now they are, like myself, jacks of all trade. They can do voiceovers, they can shoot, they can edit, they can write, they can script, they can, you know, create content of all manner and forms. And we plugged that platform into newsrooms around the world, starting here in Australia. And then I traveled vastly for about 6 months and really just taking that service to, you know, the likes of NBC there in New York and the BBC in London and right across Asia and beyond. And it was a really exciting adventure for the first couple of years, as any new business would tell you. There was lots of ups and downs. And what we discovered was there was a lot of downs. You know, it was really a challenge because newsrooms would knock our door down if there was a news story that they needed help with covering. It was about 18 months ago that we started getting some inbound inquiries from brands who were getting into publishing themselves, and they started asking us about our capabilities, our network of journalists, and we had this aha moment where all of a sudden we realized that brands too were becoming great publishers of content.
Right. Well, there are two things I'm curious about there. Sort of initially when you were almost like the Uber of journalists, it sounds like. Were those journalists, were they still independent contractors or were they employees of Newsmodo?
They were all independent contractors. So Newsmodo was really just established initially to aggregate all that talent and to give so many talented journalists out there a means to create a personal branding online. You know, many of them had been laid off or, you know, left their long-term full-time jobs, you know, to try and seek new avenues of employment and had very little idea about, you know, the digital world.
Right. Now, so now it's developed into this brand journalism, if you will. Is that what you would call it? Brand journalism? Is that?
Yeah, we do come across that term a lot. I like to say that we apply the craft of journalism to content marketing, okay. You know, the craft of storytelling. The capabilities of journalists are very unique, I believe, particularly experienced ones in understanding and navigating the challenges of crafting great content, you know, understanding the audience, the tone, the nature of the story, and trying to really bring about the gems of that story that resonate with an audience. And really, that's where content marketing is heading now. It's not about SEO-driven keyword stuffing, you know, cheaply generated articles. It's about crafting great stories that resonate with an audience and compel them to like, share, or engage with that content in some way.
How would you say that it's what you do is different from branded content, or is it on a spectrum of branded content?
Look, any content that is produced by a brand is obviously going to be labeled branded content. The large majority of what we actually create is delivered back to the client for them then to publish through their own means and distribute through their own means. And of course, then that does fall under the bracket of the broader understanding of branded content.
These days, authenticity is this buzzword we hear a lot, especially around millennials and how they don't want to be sold to. And how does brand sponsored content/journalism, it sounds like in some ways it's a double-edged sword in that your journalists are going to be more likely to create authentic, real, compelling stories which will connect with people. And yet, by virtue of being sponsored by a brand, is that a harder thing to cut through, that people perceive it as being sold to or not?
The juxtaposition of terms, really, isn't it, when you're sponsoring content that should be transparent? There's always going to be influence across any branded content. That's undeniable. And the journalists that we engage are fully aware of that. But having said that, our whole spiel, I guess, is that the content that really does work best, and it does take a leap of faith, is content that adds value, content that is, to your point, transparent and speaks more broadly about topics that are not brand-centric or brand-driven.
You've just segued so beautifully into my next thing, which was thought leadership and content marketing. And where is the point where one crosses into the other?
Well, like we always say with any new client, this is a marathon, not a sprint. If you want to turn on a tap of a new audience and you want to invest $10,000, $20,000 in a Google AdWords campaign, you know, by all means, go for it. But the engagement that you're getting is a very, very different engagement to the quality of the communications and the touch points that you will have with any audience that comes to you through content marketing, or another word for it is inbound marketing. So it does take time, you know, like any relationship, to build trust and to build that engagement is going to take time. But when you do bring people into your funnel, into your world online through content marketing or inbound marketing, they're far more likely to start coming to you for questions, and I guess seeing you as that, to your point, that authoritative figure within your industry.
Right. Now, are there particular verticals that you tend to have greater success with, in terms of that they either understand what you're doing better, or it's just a better fit with what you do, or are you really cross-industry?
It is a very diverse range of clients that we work with here in Australia and overseas. And I think more and more brands, you know, if you were go out and speak with 10 different brands across multiple verticals, you would unequivocally get that content is going to be a big part of their play this year. And however they shape that content. Of course, with the fashion industry, FMCG, you know, those more consumer-facing industries are more likely to be pushing content through, typically through social channels and, right, and engaging, you know, short form content creation. But so to that point, you know, the B2B industries, the finance industry, the health industries, education, we're doing a lot of work in. Predominantly at this point, and historically for us, a lot of great banks that we've been working with are literally publishing stories that rival the quote-unquote traditional media outlets.
Right, right. I think another thing I think that content marketing or, you know, this type of inbound marketing allows you to do is to build a relationship with the consumer and avoid the whole issue of ad blocking, which is becoming increasingly problematic. Certainly with young people are ad blocking. 2/3 of them are ad blocking. So it's pretty significant. They don't want to be sold to. They're doing this wonderful content and it's getting picked up, which is great. How do you also advise on how content discovery works and how they can push their content out?
Absolutely. You know, as the market matures and content marketing itself matures, we really only work with those brands that want to commit the whole way. And oftentimes, you know, in the past, we've worked with clients that will get to a point where they're like, hang on, we're creating content, but, you know, who's here to see it? What can you guys do to help us actually build an audience to this? And that's why over the last year or so, we've really been working on our own audience capabilities through our network of 25,000 journalists. And a very simple mechanism, you know, to keep it, you know, very straightforward in this instance would be if we engage a very reputable finance journalist to write a story for one of our clients, when that story goes live on their website, we can then engage that journalist beyond that publication to then post links on their LinkedIn or their social channels to then link back to that story.
Right. One of the things, though, going back to sort of when you launched, I mean, it's interesting that at launch, it was helping to build the brand for these freelance journalists. And now, you know, so many years on, these freelance journalists have a brand and a following such that they can activate the content they're writing for their client, for your clients. Is that, I mean...
Exactly. And you know, that was never our intent when we launched Newsmoto. You know, I was a journalist for over 10 years. As I said, I had no idea what content marketing was.
It
was kind of bubbling away, I think, over the last 5 years. But certainly from my perspective, it found us. We didn't find it. And I think, you know, like any good business, being open to pivoting was really critical for us. And, you know, it was really just fortuitous that we had built this network and we had supported the journalists. We had gone out and really worked with a lot of associations that represented those journalists to find out what was in their best interests in terms of pay rates and how we could really bring them to relationships and connect them with, at that point, those traditional newsrooms. So when the brand started coming to us saying, look, we want to be like those newsrooms, we want to rival those newsrooms and bring audiences to our newsroom, we were really well equipped to then stack them up with great quality, talented content creators or contributors.
Right. Now I have two questions to go with that. One is, they're tweeting and they're posting the article, and that's fantastic. But does that in any way dilute the thought leadership, if you will, of the people at the brand? Or do you ever white label it so that you're actually building the thought leadership of the CEO at the brand, that
that's a great point.
Ghostwriting for them, essentially?
Yeah, that's a great point, and one that I just touched on in my podcast, Brand Storytelling, this week, actually, which is really fascinating. We were talking about influencers. It was the theme of the show. And my guest, Trevor Young, the PR warrior, as he's known down here in Australia, was saying, hey, why not create influencers within your brand? That's really where you want to be at.
Right.
And that's something that we're working towards. A lot of our, at a high level, a number of our clients will engage a particular journalist to work directly with their CEO or someone within their business to help them shape the content that then they distribute, essentially ghostwriting for that client. And that's something that we are doing more of, and we're trying to help unearth the people behind the businesses. You know, content marketing is really all about drawing back the curtains, that iron wall.
Right. So then the next question I had is, you had written a piece on LinkedIn saying that 75% of executives have become more selective about the content sources, and that there's so much volume being pumped up by marketers, so they're taking less on board. So at the same time as you're growing your business, people are becoming more selective about their own personal curation. How do you roll with that? How does that change how you approach things?
Yeah, absolutely. And we're totally on board with that. You know, there's a really good saying about not producing content that doesn't stick. And if you're going to be in the content marketing game, you don't want to be necessarily being a king of every domain but a master of none, or you don't want to be necessarily producing so much content that you are delivering it through 27 channels. I think one of our clients was saying at one stage they were producing or trying to produce and none of them were being done well. What we would love to be able to do is, like the old TV mentality, going back to my old days, you turn on the box at 6 o'clock and there's the news. The audience, you set an agenda, you set a meeting time or a date with an audience, and they know and they expect that that piece of content is going to land in their inbox or wherever they discover it, weekly, fortnightly, whatever it is. And so what we're trying to do is start to create that mentality of becoming a publisher of high quality content and making every post a winner with the material, the stories that we create.
And when you do the work for your clients, is it work for hire? So the IP is resident in your clients, or is it some sort of shared? I mean, writers retain copyright unless they assign it. So
So it all becomes the property of the client. Uh-huh. And often the client will, not often, but at times the client might wish to break that content down, as I mentioned. So if we were to create an ebook, they might publish it at different points, or, you know, carve it up into shorter form articles. That's really theirs to restructure. But that doesn't necessarily happen very often, but it is their material to own and to publish.
Right. One of your content creators wrote an article for Newsmoto called "The Surprising Marketing Lessons from Super Mario Run." And one of the things that the article mentioned was nostalgia marketing. And I find this really interesting, looking at Netflix in the media space and Fuller House and Gilmore Girls. And
why Stranger Things?
Well, that's interesting, because I was going to say Stranger Things actually is original storytelling blended with nostalgia marketing. I think it's really taking those two things and really creating something new. Why do you think we're seeing this power of nostalgia? And do you believe it's the same sort of zeitgeist that Trump tapped into with Make America Great? Is it a reaction to rapidity of change? What's behind it? And is it a cultural movement? What do you think?
Well, I can only speak from my own experience that there was this tiny little Nintendo that came out, I don't know, a couple of months ago, and they put it out on a very small release. It's like the original 8-bit Nintendo NES, and it had the 32 games all installed, and it was only available online for like an hour on Target at 8 a.m. or something, and the Target site here in Australia crashed, and I was one of those many, obviously tens of thousands or however many thousands of people that were on their phones on the way into work or wherever on the train trying to purchase one of these $99 Nintendos, you know. And I think that goes to show that this is what you're talking about is clear and present. It's something that is very relevant in a lot of the content that we're creating, hence that piece on the Super Mario Run game on iTunes. But I think it really comes down to just the simplicity of life, and for many of us reflecting on that, and we probably didn't realize it at the time, but you know, for me, you know, those were such great memories, such great times. And like any content, if you create something that resonates with you, like, you know, the Stranger Things intro, my God, every time it came on, I'd say to my wife, I love that. I love that laser and the kind of the synthesizer music. It reminds me of E.T. or something. And
yeah.
I'm like, you know what I mean? It's just, it resonates. And there's something about that that's comforting. It's warm. It's gooey. It reminds you of great times and being a kid and having fun.
Well, what's amazing with that, though, is my kids, who have none of the nostalgia that I bring to it, they love it too. And they my son was like, listen to this sound. I downloaded the soundtrack to the Stranger Things. I'm like, you're kidding, you know, that this is, I mean, you know, maybe he's an odd kid, but still, you know, it's it really works cross-generationally. And so what is it hitting in the culture, and then, you know, how you know, simplicity, I think, maybe speaks to something, and because of all the complexity, you know, as a counterpoint to the complexity.
Absolutely. And I think that goes back to that point around setting an agenda, doing one thing really well. Don't try and be a master of every channel. Try and be, you know, pick one and do it really, really well and own that. Pick one niche and do that really well and own that. And I was, one of our clients is a global a soft drink brand, and we're working on a very niche content hub with them. And it's actually it's a business hub. And I was talking about that offline with my guest on my podcast just yesterday. And he's like, that is so smart, because they're not trying to do everything, you know, on this hub. They're just picking one thing and they're doing it really, really well. And they're adding value. And I think the simplicity of that, there's so much choice now online. There's so much crap now online. You really do need to try and just find something that you love, that you're passionate about, and bring it to life, you know. And I'm sure you feel that with your podcast. You know, it's something that you lock in, you set it, and you give it your all. And that comes through in the engagement audience.
I think also what you've got is there's a, you know, is it wide and very thin, or is it narrow and deep? And so you actually get something useful. A lot of the information, if you scratch around the internet, when you start looking, you find a lot of the same information, a lot of different places that doesn't go much deeper than skating on the surface. You know, you rapidly realize that everybody's cutting and pasting and referencing the same things. But if you really want something useful, actionable, interesting, you have to dig a little deeper. One of the things I'm curious about is with the fake news and alternative facts and the post-truth world that we're entering in, certainly in America. I don't know how that has bled around the globe, but certainly it's a big deal here. Is that challenging to brands? Is that environment creating an extra layer of challenge to brands who are trying to create newsworthy content?
I think a lot of the brands are playing it really safe. The content that largely, by and large, they're creating isn't opinion-based, that's for sure. It isn't necessarily newsworthy either. It's really taking a snapshot of current climates and putting their own lens across it. So when you're talking about factual content, you know, we have our own editorial desk, just like any newsroom, and we work with the journalists to cross-check and, you know, footnote every piece that we deliver. But, you know, it's less likely that that kind of content will be published by brands, just for the nature of what they're trying to produce. So, you know, they're not delivering hard, what we would call hard news. They're not, you know, creating, you know, material that's talking about Trump signing documents last week that, you know, changed the rights and lives of millions of people around the world. So to that, it's really less of a factor, but certainly I think brands are and are becoming more increasingly aware of their responsibilities as publishers. That's undeniable. You know, we have very, you know, the T's and C's of the documents that we and the contracts that we work on are lengthy and engaging and take a long time to go through with a fine tooth comb to make sure that the accountability is there.
Right. Do you believe that there are brands that are really emerging as leaders in this space? I mean, obviously, they're probably your clients who you're working with. Who are you? who would you say this is a really, other than, let's say, the bank you referenced, is there any other in another sector where you say this is somebody who's doing it right?
Yeah, everybody in, I'm sure you would have already had this conversation in other podcasts, but talking about Red Bull, you know, the brand that launched as a soft drink, as an energy drink, and is now literally a global media entity that also sells those energy drinks. They've got TV channels, they've got TV shows, they've got, I was on a flight over to the States actually and was watching a Red Bull documentary, nothing to do with extreme sports. It was actually about entrepreneurs and them doing amazing things like saving water in African nations and working with, you know, mothers and homeless children, you know, and all these incredible stories that Red Bull were actually unearthing as a media entity. I think they're undeniably doing it really well. Obviously, in the United States, another great brand doing content marketing at the highest level is Marriott. You know, and they're literally operating a newsroom that would rival some of the biggest and the best newsrooms around the world. And those that are doing it really well, you know, are really upskilling their understanding of what quality content is all about. Because if anything, you know, if you want to take anything away about brand storytelling and brand journalism, it really has to be that everything needs to be hung off the hook of quality. If you don't put that first, then everything else you're setting up for failure. And here in Australia, I guess some of the companies that we've been working with that do this really well are insurers. We have a great client in CGU here. And their challenge was that they have all these brokers all around the country who on-sell their services, but they needed to enlighten those brokers. They needed to inspire and give them material and content and stories to share with the people that they were onboarding as customers. Right. So it was a really interesting challenge from that perspective. And what we started doing was mapping out a whole series of content that married up with key dates in the calendar year so that when they were publishing relevant to whether it be coming into bushfire season or whether it be coming into flood season is a very simple example. But they were also daring enough to engage us to create content in an area that we like to call newsjacking. And an example of that was that really is leveraging what's currently in people's minds and conversations, the water cooler conversations around the country, and turning around in a fast clip content like a newsroom on the day or overnight that they can put out and is timely and relevant. And that really worked well.
Yeah.
A great example of that was when Brexit was unfolding. We spoke with them and a number of other clients on, I think it was the Friday afternoon. And, you know, in our time, this was all happening. And we said, look, we can work on this over the weekend. We can monitor it for you. We already understand the tone and the nature of the content that you look to publish. And we were able to create a long-form article written by a journalist with deep knowledge of the industry and the space, and as well as that, tie in an infographic about what that meant for their industry, their customer base. And, wow, you know, that was distributed on first thing on the Monday, 10 a.m. on Monday, just like all the other newspapers. But it was a perfectly branded piece of long-form content with a really simple infographic that really just fleshed out Brexit's now happened since Friday, and this is what it means for you. And that's really, you know, the high, wow, end of content.
Yeah, and the timeliness, the speed, that's really fantastic. Well, we have run through all of our time, actually. But before we, and it's been really fun, before we go, I have this thing that I like to do with people, and I hope,
yep,
you play with me. I just say a word, and you say the first word that comes to mind to you.
I love this game.
Okay, good.
Let's do it.
All right, Facebook.
Fun.
Google.
What else?
Snapchat.
Twitter. News.
YouTube.
Music.
Very, I like that answer. That's a good one. Ad blockers.
Gen Y.
Art.
Talent.
Virtual reality.
Exciting.
Augmented reality.
Don't know the difference.
They are different.
The future.
Artificial intelligence.
Scary.
What excites you? What are you excited about on the horizon?
My baby boy.
Oh.
He's just the best. Excellent. Love that. Love that smile. Love waking up. And every day is just a beautiful thing.
Oh, well, that's a great way to close.
Well, it's an exciting journey. And I just wanted to say what an absolute pleasure and an honor it's been having myself on this show. I'm a big fan, and I love what you guys are doing. I think it's a great podcast. I can't wait to hear more of it, and all the best for the future in 2017.
We've reached the end of another episode of Up Next. I'd like to close by thanking a few important people who've helped bring the program to life. First, my friend Rob Naughton, the amazing voice artist who recorded our open, and of course, thanks to my production team over at Microfame Media. And a big thank you to our guest, Raquel Ebeli. And of course, most importantly, all of you, the members of our amazing audience, thank you. I'll be talking to you again next week, right here on Up Next.